Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. And that's our new intro.
Yeah,
I like it.
New theme song by Jarek Stewart, who also did our old theme song. He knew our 100th podcast was coming up, and he said, do you guys want a new theme song? And I said, yes.
Yep. Jarek always turns out a rocket, too.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I feel like since we always thought of this as like a cop show thing, like an 80s cop show, this is like our new season 3 intro. We'll need to record visuals for it.
Okay, fair enough.
Slight changes, like, you know, I'll have big mutton chops in this season. You'll have a scar over one of your eyes, Randy.
Sure.
And Nick will be African-American. season 3 was where we diversified.
Yeah, that's true. This is our 100th episode. We're not doing anything crazy. No like big crossovers. We're not bringing every staffer in like we did for number
50. I mean, there's a live studio audience.
There is, but they're very quiet. They've been instructed to be very quiet.
Yeah.
I like it. We've gagged them all.
It's a thoughtful audience.
Yes.
They're contemplative.
Yes. But I was looking back and, we didn't used to do this thing weekly. We started off,
really?
You know.
Oh, right. Well, we did it when we could.
When we could, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we had a big break and then we started recording. We sort of moved the schedule around and,
yep.
And now we record every Tuesday. So, we actually have been weekly for quite a while now.
Yes.
So we'll hit 125 and 150 much earlier than we would have otherwise.
I think we should make a plea to people to tell their friends about the podcast, that this is your place.
Yes. We would very much appreciate that. We think we put a lot of work into this and we would definitely like more listeners. So if you listen to us, just post up a link to the 100th podcast and be like, hey, these guys have been doing a lot of these.
Yep.
Go listen.
They'll school you on what the good books are a day before they hit.
That's right. I was looking back also early on, and our archives are relatively searchable in that you can sort of click previous posts, but you can't like search them.
Right.
But I think a lot of people may not know, when we first were doing this, we did a playthrough of the game Our Last Best Hope.
Right. It's a little indie RPG that's, if you know the movie Armageddon,
yeah.
Or any kind of movie like that where a little small mission team goes up against impossible odds and like half of them get killed doing it,
yep.
It's a little one-night RPG that simulates that.
Yeah, and it has a little bit of fiasco in it, and it's sort of you know, you're doing scenes and you're telling stories as you go along. But we recorded that. It was the three of us plus Jarek, and it was a lot of fun. And so if you want to go back and listen to an older episode, worth a listen, I think.
Where did you put it up, Randy?
I didn't put it up anywhere. I put it up on my Facebook.
Oh, okay.
But I just happened to be thinking about it and found it. So.
Yeah. I need to re-listen to that. I remember having a lot of fun with that game, although we were kind of learning the rules a little bit as we went. But it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
And the one bit of that I was going to mention about the podcast that we've don't talk about a lot is why we sign off every week with Yo Joe.
Which may seem a little unusual if you are not, like, a child of the 80s.
Mm-hmm. But we were looking for a sign-off. We all sort of got into comics via G.I. Joe.
Yep.
And so it is, every week, a verbal acknowledgement of the comic without which we would not be here.
Yep. And for those of you who, like, might have, like, never watched – this is really more of a G.I. Joe cartoon thing,
yeah.
Honestly,
yeah.
Than the comic, which was better.
Yes.
But it was like the rallying cry on the cartoon.
Yes.
Rather ridiculous.
It's like Teen Titans Go or
right.
Avengers Assemble.
Did the Ninja Turtles say something?
Cowabunga. Or
every team needs a rally cry.
Or what do the Winchester brothers say on Supernatural? Let's go
Supernatural forever.
Let's go drink some beer and
eat pie.
Yes.
Whatever their catchphrase
is. Right.
So that's our catchphrase. That's why we close
right.
out with
a little,
that.
It's a little callback to our past, to,
yes.
the, to the origin of our love for this great medium we call comics.
So we will start off with our, as we always do, with store news, which is our ladies' night is this coming Saturday. It's on the 13th of February. Tila is arranging all that as usual. It is a Galentine's Day gathering.
Oh,
so,
see what you did there?
So it is from 7:30 to 8:30 is sort of, open, the store will be open, and we'll have some snacks and, you know, some discounts for ladies who are there and
yep.
that kind of thing. And then from 8:30 to 9:30, it is ladies only. The store will be closing a little early. And come and talk geek stuff with your fellow ladies.
Yep. I'm sure there are going to be some dark ritual after
yep.
hours.
I don't know what all happens. I'm not a lady.
It's going to be cool, though. They'll arrange the comics in a pentagram on
yes.
the floor. And they'll summon Stanley.
Yes.
I'm not dead yet. But I'm ready to party.
Stan just comes if you put a pentagram on your floor in Cuff Comics.
That's... Hey there, heroes. Just passing through the astral plane.
And then the next Saturday, the 20th, we will have Reading with Rogues, where we're going to have Red Flags as our game of the month.
Yep.
We've talked about this numerous times, the game of bad dates. If you want to know more, go back a podcast or two. We've talked more about it.
Yep. So. Every time I tell people about it, they always crack up. And it's because it's an awesome game.
And if you have a rogue card, you get 10% off on the red flags for the month. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, our inventory sale is going this week.
Oh, right.
Our discount is up to 55%. Mm-hmm. And that's plus 2d6. If you have a rogue card, you automatically get 12% bonus.
Yep. So you will be walking out, what is it? 67%?
That's pretty good.
That's practically free.
It's practically free. Still some good stuff on that table.
There's actually like a lot of good stuff.
The BPRD volumes, which we really liked.
Yep. The big Parker graphic novel has gone, the Martini edition,
yeah.
But the smaller ones, the ones that I own because I'm just a po' boy,
yep.
Are all up there. I mean, like, those are, like, so good I can't even imagine that we're selling them at 67%
those
off.
Are some of my favorite
I'm
books.
I'm angry at people for not buying
it
them.
It makes me a little sad that nobody's
bought them.
Punch
you.
Yeah.
Why didn't you buy this earlier?
So don't buy it from Dave.
It's really good, though. There's still a lot of good Pathfinder stuff up
there. Yeah, there is, yeah. Plus a bunch of board games, and some of the D&D Attack Wing stuff is still down there if you're looking for minis for D&D.
I know some people have been eyeing those.
Yep.
Both, like, I think potentially as miniatures, and also... A lot of people just like the system, and they're like, for 67% off,
yeah.
I'll get dragons, I get orcs. You've got armies ready to roll there.
Yep. Week two is definitely when stuff starts disappearing. So if anything caught your eye, this is the week to swoop in.
Yep.
All right, so on to other news. We'll start with the exciting game news. Pandemic is doing a Cthulhu game.
Oh, yeah.
It is called Pandemic Reign of Cthulhu. It is due in, I believe, June or July. And it is a mix of Pandemic and Cthulhu. So
I was trying to figure out, is it essentially a reskinning, maybe with a few new tweaks?
Okay, so the board depicts four key locations, Arkham, Dunwich, Innsmouth, and Kingsport, divided into four regions represented by color, green, yellow, blue, and red. Three ancient ones, Shuttlemel, Azathoth, and one other. Gee, I wonder which one other. And
so maybe
multiple old ones. And there's a guide for a sanity mechanic in the game determined by a die. Now, so that's a different mechanic.
Okay, so it sounds a little bit like what they do with the Cerberus system that powers the DC deck building game when they do new ones, which is to say the basics are kind of there in the Street Fighter game or the Lord of the Rings game, but they do tweak it. They definitely tweak it for theme.
Yep.
Aside from which, honestly, even if they didn't tweak it, just the visual changes, I'm sure, that's so... The new Lovecraftian map and the monsters and stuff sounds really awesome.
They also, it looks like there may be miniatures for the hunters, the magician, the hunter, the reporter. And
those are the different characters.
Yes,
you
those
play.
Are the roles.
Oh, that's cool.
And I gather it sounds like there are maybe 12 ancient ones. So the three that we heard is just three of them.
Oh, okay.
So, it sounds like not reskin, but definitely a different version of. And
nice, that's cool.
I love Pandemic's mechanics. I am super excited to see what this looks like. So,
you know, given that Pandemic, we broadly speaking lose a little more often than we win.
Yep.
That seems very Lovecraftian. It's already that the theme of loss is already there.
Yep. Yep.
I don't know if it was you who was talking about it with Nick the other day, or somebody else who was talking about how. It's one of those games where when you lose it, you don't feel like, well, that was a waste.
No, it's...
Yeah. It's a brisk game. Well, I mean, you're not going to spend 3 hours losing. You're going to spend maybe an hour.
Yeah, 45 minutes to an hour. But some games, when you lose, and you lose constantly, you sort of feel, like, cheated or annoyed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've never felt that way with Pandemic.
It's always
Pandemic
like a nail-biting thriller.
Yep.
Yeah. It's just... Really satisfying.
One other bit of store news, that Mimic dice bag.
Oh, yeah.
That I don't know if you guys have seen online. We posted it on our store Facebook page. Basically, the Mimic is the treasure chest that turns out to be a monster that eats you because Gary Gygax was kind of a dick.
Right. But it is still a classic D&D monster.
It's a beloved D&D monster.
You think you got the treasure.
Yes.
Suddenly the thing pops open. It's got teeth and it starts gnawing.
Yeah. So they're making a dice bag. Ultra Pro is making a dice bag that is the Mimic. It's basically
like a little plush Mimic.
Yes, it's a plush Mimic. It's adorable and it holds dice. dice, and I believe it's got a zipper, so you can zip up your dice in there.
A lot of people are going to lose their hands.
actually, I foresee a lot of awesome Facebook photos and stuff of their hand inside that, screaming in agony. Yep.
But we are going to be getting that hopefully soon. Whenever it gets released, we will have it. So if you want one, drop us a pre-order. I am probably going to pick one up.
I will be very tempted.
Okay, so we got a couple of bits of TV news. There's a MacGyver reboot at CBS, which holds little interest to me in general. And I believe, Dave, you and I have never seen an episode
Correct.
Of MacGyver.
I know it by reputation.
Nick?
I've seen a few episodes.
Okay, all right.
I was entertained by it. I didn't think it was, you know, an A-Team or...
it was basically that era, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was that era, yeah.
It was an A-Team or one of the other, Knight Rider, but, you know... It was fun.
But I know the basic thing. He would get in sticky situations. He'd grab and improvise whatever he had around him into a gyrocopter.
Yep. He was one of the first.
Every episode, a gyrocopter.
He was one of the first guys who made sort of sciencing cool.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Paperclip stick.
Did anybody know, like, what was his training or whatever that did that? Or was he just good at that stuff? Was
I forget.
Was he like an ex-CIA agent?
Wasn't he a spy? He was a spy, right?
I think he was like an agent of some sort.
Yeah.
Because I remember they did, like, a comic series not too long ago.
Huh. Yep.
And it was definitely sort of he was a secret agent for some government organization.
Yep.
So, I mean, it works. It's like,
mainly he's a gyrocopter maker.
I mean, yeah, stick of gum, paperclip, gyrocopter.
There were a lot of shadowy secret agencies working for good in the 80s, weren't there? Like, Knight Rider, the same thing. It was like a secret
Michael
agency.
Knight, yep.
You know what would have been cool if they did, a crossover? Because, you know, the A-Team was being hunted by the government.
Yep.
If these guys were on the trail.
Yeah.
Knight Rider's got to go take down the A-Team.
That would have been cool.
Sure. And B.A. Brackus beats up his car.
Airwolf was involved.
Airwolf. How's nobody ever done a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen for the 80s heroes?
You know, I've seen it with, on DeviantArt and stuff.
Sure,
I'm
but
sure.
A story. I want a story.
Yeah, you got to get the rights.
But
anyway, the notable thing on MacGyver is it's being produced by...
It's being... The pilot is being directed by James Wan.
James Wan, who's the horror meister behind the Insidious series. What's the other one he did?
He did Fast and the Furious.
Fast and Furious is the most recent one.
Yes, I think the most recent one.
What was the other horror movie he did with the investigating couple?
Conjuring.
The Conjuring, yeah.
He's not sequel for that as well.
And isn't he directing something else notable, like sci-fi or superhero?
Yeah, I forget.
He's not doing that cyberpunk thing.
No.
That was almost like maybe one of his proteges or something.
Is he doing Star Trek?
Yes.
He's doing Star Trek.
Star Trek. Is it actually James Wan?
I think it might. I think
it
might be.
It's Justin Lin.
It's Justin Lin. Okay.
Not the same guy.
Ballpark. Anyway.
That's right.
James Wan is doing MacGyver for CBS. Star Trek on CBS, coming in January 2017, is being done by Brian Fuller.
Yeah, they got a notable showrunner.
He's going to showrun it.
Yep.
Now, this is the CBS Star Trek that's only going to be through their streaming.
All Access?
All Access.
Yeah.
Well,
right?
given that everything I've heard is that Limitless is good.
Yeah, Limitless is
good. Supergirl is really good.
Yep.
I might actually pony up for this to get if the Star Trek is actually going to be Brian Fuller's Star Trek.
I mean, that's so...
That's a reversal for me. I was not planning on getting this.
He seems really into it. Now, help me out because I am not the TV viewer. Y'all are. The main thing I know him for is Hannibal.
Yes, but prior to that, he did Pushing Daisies.
Right.
Dead Like Me, and he did Wonderfalls.
Yeah, Wonderfalls. And the one thing I've never seen from him.
He definitely does sort of the quirky. He has a bit of a Tim Burton to him, but a little lighter than that.
Okay.
But then he did Hannibal and sort of this darker side of himself.
Yeah.
He's a great TV producer. Like, everything he does is good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So him being involved is really good news.
Yeah. You know what's interesting is they still haven't said in their in the write up for it quite whether it's going to be like more based on the classic shows, you know, basically anything from Kirk's era up through Next Generation,
right?
Or the movies. They did seem to make it clear it's going to be not the Enterprise.
Right.
It's going to be some other ship in some other area of the galaxy.
That's good.
And I think that's good. And I almost wondered if they could do it in such a way where they don't say whether it's part of old continuity or new.
I heard rumors that it was the old continuity. It was sort of their prime universe.
I've heard those rumors too, but I think it's people wanting to believe it.
Yeah,
I don't think we know anything.
Yeah, I haven't heard any rumors per se. I saw a write-up that said why it could be that, and I thought they made a decent, surprisingly decent case that wasn't straight wish fulfillment.
Sure.
But... the assumption would be, and I think one of it was like, I thought, you know, one of the arguments they made that was good was that simply the merchandising of it.
Yeah.
There are all those classic Trek properties. You know, there's like 6 or 7 TV shows that have been where you could, if this takes off, you could, you know, get all that stuff back up and running again.
Right.
But there's only been 2 movies so far with not a ton of merchandise.
Right.
So, and that's, you know, I guess CBS has all of, I guess traditionally they don't cross over with the movies.
Right.
They don't play ball with them, or right. like specifically. No, we'll see. I don't know at this point.
I don't either.
But Fuller is somebody who I'm excited to hear on there.
All right. And then we had a bunch of trailers from the Super Bowl.
Right.
First of all,
watched most of them.
There was an ad for Coke.
Uh-huh.
That was Ant-Man versus the Hulk.
Yep.
Complete with Paul Rudd's voice.
Yep.
That was fun. It's like a little 15-second or maybe 30-second.
Like a 30-second spot.
Like
a
little mini-movie of the Marvel Universe. It was a lot of fun. I liked it. And we'll tag all these, of course, in our show notes if you want to go look at our show notes.
It felt very Ant-Man.
Yeah, it felt very Ant-Man.
Which is good.
Well, I love the idea of Ant-Man and Hulk sort of running afoul of one another. It's kind of fun.
Well, what's fun is that they've also got, they've got enough of a diversity of superhero characters out there that they can kind of do little odd mixtures like
yeah,
that.
It's, yeah.
Weird team-ups can begin.
Well, this is one of the reasons I'm looking forward to Civil War is because we can see all these characters start to interact a little more, yeah. Which leads me to the Civil War teaser.
Yes.
Another, like, 30-second teaser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
it looked badass.
It looked badass, and I think we got a little more hint as to why Tony Stark might be a little pissed off at the Winter Soldier.
What was that? I forget.
Well, it might be when he tries to shoot him in the face.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We see the sides definitively set up there.
Yep.
We see, I'm trying to think if there's anything else notable, but yeah, it's just sort of a little teaser, great little moments, and
Marvel hashtagging choose your side.
Yeah, choose your side,
Marvel's definitely playing up the pick a side thing.
And that's the thing. I've seen people are really picking up on this movie based on very little information. Like, right. I've seen lots of people talking about, like, well, Black Widow clearly isn't happy to be there. And I'm like, because she gave one side eye and you've seen a meme? yeah. Or well, of course, Hawkeye would be Team Cap because he's worried about his secret identity and his family after Iron Man, you know, after Avengers 2. And I'm like, the Civil War doesn't seem to have anything to do with secret identities.
Right. It's not they're not replaying the comic thing. It's clearly going to be somehow centered around, like, Winter Soldier.
Yeah. People are doing.
I mean, I think it will be about superhuman registration.
Do you? I don't think there's any way it's going to be about superhuman registration.
I do because, I mean, they mentioned the
because
Accords.
You've read some stuff.
That's
Did
a
they?
Big thing.
Did they mention the Accords?
Yes. In the after Ant-Man, the little snippet, Rogers mentions it. In one of the trailers, it's mentioned again. So there's obviously something.
Yeah.
And it's not all about Winter Soldier, but Winter Soldier is a big part of it.
Yeah, I feel like people are speculating wildly based on such little information. And that's fine. It's fun to speculate.
Yeah.
But there's people who are like doing the thing. This is one of the things I hate about the original Civil War comic. They're like, oh, I hate Iron Man. He's such a jerk. Or oh, Cap is such a Nazi for going along with this. It's so ironic. And I'm like, let's remember these are writers making characters do things. Like,
right.
The characters aren't doing anything.
Yeah. One hopes is that in the movie, it feels like the behavior emerges organically, whereas Mark Miller in the comic was clearly kind of forcing your square peg into a round hole
right.
in many cases.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
I do actually have some decent faith in the movie that
they're
going to pull this off. And, you know, clearly there's going to have to be a bit of tarnishing going on in both probably Cap and Iron Man and some other characters.
Yeah.
It can't just be a misunderstanding. But I think it probably will emerge more organically.
Yeah, I think so too. But I'm very excited about this. That's
a great spot. So.
I'm looking forward to Civil War. There was also a new Age of Apocalypse trailer.
Yep.
Which is mostly notable for showing us Psylocke.
Yes, with a really spectacularly awesome shot of her cleaving a car in half.
Yep.
With her psychic blade.
Dave, I thought you were going to say of her cleavage.
That too.
Inappropriate.
Look, Psylocke has always had that going on.
Actually, Olivia Munn is Psylocke. I thought when they first cast her, it sounded perfect, and she looks perfect.
Pretty much dead on.
So,
yeah. We were talking earlier, noting I don't think in the comics her psychic blades generally
cut through cars,
physical objects.
Yeah,
but.
Dave, I'm just going to say, she's a ninja. She can cut through cars.
I'm all about it. It's not as if the X-Men movies already haven't staked out some pretty different territory
in
the comics.
Yeah.
But also, it looked super cool.
I am also, I don't think we're going to get it, but I would love it if she had the British accent. I bet she won't do it. I don't imagine Olivia Munn doing the accent work.
Would that just like put the hotness scale through past 10?
No, I just like her being British. I thought that was a cool element of her backstory.
I was never clear if when she became Ninja Psylocke, if she, did she retain it?
Did you? I thought she was always still British.
Really? Yeah. I thought she lost her accent.
It's cooler if she's British.
No, remember how she's always saying, "I'm a ninja governor"?
I think I might have missed
and
that.
And then she's like, "Oi, oi, oi.
Oi, oi, oi."
Like a bit of tea.
In the rubbish bin.
And finally, there was the 10 Cloverfield Lane trailer.
Yes.
Another really brief one.
Right,
but,
more atmosphere than anything.
Yeah.
But it did hint at the, in case people were not like sure if they were going to be doing monster stuff, there's like roaring and stuff.
There's pretty
like,
yeah. clearly monsters.
But there is not like, you don't even see like a big old paw landing anywhere. It's no monster shown still. Yeah.
But I would expect some viral marketing to start appearing for it other than just trailers. Because remember the viral marketing before Cloverfield?
Yeah.
It was like all this weird, you had to decipher like websites.
And, well, Abrams loves that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, Abrams loves that kind of stuff. And I would imagine we'll start seeing more of it.
I am curious as to what its approach is going to be. I mean, it seems like half of it, or, you know, the trailers center around this kind of, like,
John Goodman.
John Goodman is, like, some kind of crazy survivalist
or
something.
Like, he had planned for sort of this outcome or this possibility.
But it seemed like the human drama side of it will kind of be that.
Yeah.
And then there will perhaps be, presumably, be actual survivalist elements as creatures of some sort, or a creature, runs rampant.
I don't know. I'm curious.
Yeah, they're pretty good. They managed to really keep the lid on this one.
I'm trying to remember at the end of Cloverfield, did they stop the monster,
or did it just like leave or something?
I don't think they stopped it.
I don't know.
I know you walked.
Nobody
out.
Remembers.
I didn't walk. I want to be clear. I didn't walk out for quality reasons. I could not stay in the theater because the shaky cam.
Most of this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, which is why I'm happy that this one does not seem bad.
Have to revisit this movie.
Yeah, I would consider revisiting it just on the basis of I like found footage, even crappy found footage sometimes. And it wasn't crappy, actually. But it was not great.
There were points in that movie where I was like, he would have dropped the camera and ran. But we'll see.
Finally, on the last bit of news, we are going to be out at Lakeline Alamo on Thursday, starting about 6 and running till we don't know when. We're going to have a little mini Deadpool store set up because we're going to be there for their Deadpool screening.
Yep.
And,
might even have convinced Deadpool himself to come out.
We might have.
And maybe
it's going to be cool.
And so if you are going to be going to see Deadpool at the Lakeline Alamo on Thursday, stop and say hi to us.
Yes. Yep.
And sure, if you weren't planning on it, all the shows are sold out. Sorry about that. But I'm sure there's more shows. All right. That'll about wrap up the news. We'll be back in just a minute to talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, February 10th. I'm going to cheat even more than I usually cheat by having cheater picks.
Cheater.
Because my picks this week would really be Ms. Marvel number 4 and Avengers number 5, which are great as always. Ms. Marvel starts a new arc, has a new artist. These books are fantastic. They remain some of my favorites. But I'm not picking them because I've talked about them every issue for...
We know.
So instead I'm going to mention a couple of number ones that are not like my main picks, but are new issues that people might want to check out.
New and worthy.
And the first one I'm going to mention is Shaft, Imitation of Life, number 1.
Damn right.
Yeah. It's by David Walker, who wrote the last Shaft series, and art by Dietrich Smith, who is a different artist, who is sort of in the same vein as the last guy, has a little bit of that Steve Dillon-esque sort of straightforward look to it, but is almost a little bit of poser going on in there.
That
program, a little bit stiff.
Yeah.
It's solid. It's just, I wish it was a little stronger. It's not as strong as the previous art, but it's good. And more importantly, Walker's stories of Shaft, that are basically Shaft as a private eye in the 70s, are really good.
Right. Like, what I remember is he was writing pretty serious crime fiction.
Yeah. So he's drawing on his sort of book, which I guess the novels were the things first.
So at this point, is he a private eye?
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Because in the previous series, he wasn't.
This is him as private eye.
He came back from the war,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, he'd been in Vietnam.
Yes.
And was sort of
it is very specifically the period in which it was originally set.
Yes. Yeah. No, this is a private eye. It is in the 70s, but he's a private eye in this one. He gets hired... he sort of has been in a fog after the events of the previous series, and he comes back to be a private eye again. And
where is he on the badass scale?
Well, he's got the mustache.
Oh yeah, because he was still working to get there in
yeah,
the previous.
Yeah, one. This is definitely more of the early days of Shaft Dude, as Shaft.
I need to read this. I'm
and it's to it. It's got some very 70s stuff in it. They do talk about gay people, like you talked about gay people in the 70s, somewhat offensively.
Yeah,
but I think that's part of the deal.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, and he's basically. Hired to sort of go into that world.
Interesting.
And okay, weird. I liked it quite a bit. It's a fun first issue. Dave, what do you got for us?
Let's see. I'm going a little bit off the radar today. I am. My first book is one from Boom Studios. They're yep. all ages line. Is it Boombox?
Mm-hmm.
But the comic itself is called Jonesy. This is kind of an adorable all ages comic that I would say is like a more all ages Scott Pilgrim.
Okay.
It has that same vibe to me. It's about this girl, I'm guessing she's in high school, named Jonesy. And the art style is somewhere between sort of that Scott Pilgrim and things like that inspired Scott Pilgrim. I would say like Tezuka's artwork, you know, the manga guy Tezuka.
You know, I can also see sort of Dan Hip from Teen yep. Titans Go in there.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's actually beautifully drawn, and I really like the character designs. She's kind of a girl who it's Valentine's Day at school. They have this tradition of giving out carnations of different colors to, you know, your boyfriend or girlfriend or to somebody you have a crush on, and she's feeling awkward because, like any single person, she hates Valentine's Day.
Sure.
She does the thing where of talking to the viewer, sort of Ferris Bueller style or any fourth wall breaking style,
right.
And also has the power to make people fall in love. That is the surreal, magical realism Scott Pilgrim-esque.
Okay. All right.
She's not above using it to mess with people, but the way it occurs is kind of always sort of weird and surreal. It's not even like kind of the obvious stuff you would think. But it is really funny. She's also got a pet ferret. I just felt like I needed to throw
sure.
that out
mm-hmm.
in there. Here's my favorite scene in it was when she's trying to she's feeling alone, and she was one of the mean girls at school has made fun of her, and she's thinking back on advice her grandmother once gave her. And you get a little flashback panel of her grandmother saying with, like, this giant scowl, "Eat all who oppose you." So it is a surreal little... I mean, honestly, Scott Pilgrim is what I keep going back to, and I feel like that is probably the benchmark for it.
Okay.
And I mean that in a very strong way, even though this is not... I don't think it's going to go to some of the more serious places it went to. It's probably
yeah.
more like the lighter video game fighty craziness.
Sure.
But it has enough roots in sort of emotional realism that it's not just, like, just completely wackiness, like Adventure Times type stuff. Anyway, I would say give it a try if you are, you know, if you flip through it, you like the art. If you're looking for something for your teenager or preteen, probably even, it's safe. There's no bad language or anything in it. It is a good, fun little new series. Jonesy.
All right.
Jonesy.
Nick?
Jonesy.
I'm just waiting. One more.
Jonesy!
There we go. No, I'm going to sound like a broken record because I've picked Deadpool quite a bit. This is the side series Spider-Man Deadpool. So, a team up between two people who hate each other.
Yep. Looks like three people.
Yes, this one actually has a guest star. Another Spider-Man in the sense of Miles
what?
Morales. Which is actually kind of cool. But
I have
yeah.
a quick question for you
yes.
before you proceed further. Is this a continuation of the first issue storyline, or is it in each issue they're like swinging around the city? It's finally swinging around the city, and he bumps into him again.
No, this is actually a continuation of the first story.
Okay.
Mainly because the first story, somebody has hired Deadpool to kill Peter Parker.
Okay,
and because Deadpool knows that Peter Parker is really associated with Spider-Man, he thinks he has an in because he wants to help. He wants Spider-Man to help him kill Peter Parker. Which is not going to go well for him, but obviously...
I thought you said the other week he wasn't killing people, Nick.
yeah, that was a couple of days ago you were trying to convince me the Deadpool didn't kill people no more.
Well, he hasn't killed anybody yet.
Hey, he's planning to!
Oh, he's actually trying to suss out if the information that he has been given is truthful,
okay.
or if it's bogus.
Okay, fair enough.
And this leads on to a wacky adventure where Spider-Man, Miles Morales, and team up sort of to fight a villain that just happens to be there. It's sort of unconventional the way they defeat the villain.
Do we want to say who the villain is?
No, okay. it's a fun reveal. But I will say this book has me cracking up. I mean, everything. I mean, Joe Casey just gets Deadpool, probably the best.
So Joe Kelly.
Yeah, I mean the quips, the humor is very biting.
He was the one who kind of like pretty much set him up.
Yeah, he's the one who sort of.
What Jerry Dugan and Brian Posehn had done. They did a great job with him. But
Dugan's no Kelly.
But this is very true. Well, I think Kelly understands him a little bit.
Joe Kelly is the guy who basically made Deadpool what he is.
Yeah. And I have to say, McGinnis is a superb draftsman. I mean, it's clean, crisp. His action is fantastic, as it always has been.
I forgot that was Ed McGinnis.
Yeah. McGinnis drawing Spider-Man actually is great. I mean, the way he's sort of just swinging around the city. But I will say that there are some cool moments. One, I will say that Deadpool has co-opted the Spider-Mobile and made it his own.
It sounds like something Deadpool would
yes,
do.
Yes, it does. But there's also sort of something more to the story, because the person pulling strings is interesting, and there's something definitely up at Parker Industries. So this is feeding into more of the larger Marvel universe.
Okay.
Than
so there first it is not. It is not just this. The one of those like sort of raw comedy Deadpool.
Right. It's
ones.
Not. Off, it's not off to the side of the Marvel universe. Right. It's definitely, you know, at the heart of it. So we'll see where exactly it leads. But yeah, I really dig it.
Cool. My cheater pick is a book called King's Road. It's a 3-issue miniseries from Dark Horse. It's being written by Peter Hogan, art by Phil Winslet, just sort of a cool painty style. And this is a big 48-page first issue for $3.99, which is a pretty great deal. Basically, this is a story about a suburban. There's a suburban life, and it's a wife and husband, and they have their two kids who are sort of grown up. They're teenagers, and all of a sudden, sort of monsters come at them. And it turns out that this mom and dad were the king and queen of this realm, that they had sort of retired away from that realm to be
like
normal.
An alternate dimension
realm? Yeah, like an alternate dimension realm. So like a fantasy
world,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And an evil queen has taken over their realm, and so some of their former vassals come to seek their help and get them to come back and bring their kids back to this world and fight for the kingdom.
This is like an inversion of, and maybe a more lighthearted version of what's the Image book?
Birthright.
Birthright.
Yeah, yeah. It is, and it's
Birthright is all about like families being torn apart. This sort of sounds like it is the family.
Yeah. I really like this, and if you like the sort of these lost magical destiny kind of things like Magicians or Harry Potter or one of those, this is an interesting take on that, and I think you'd probably dig it. I was not expecting to like it as much as I did, so definitely worth a look.
Nice.
Nick, what's your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is, again, something I've probably picked every issue of, so I won't go too in-depth, but this is Only Wolverine number 5. Tom Taylor, David Lopez, they're amazing at what they do. More people need to check this book out. But this one is sort of, each issue has kind of teamed her up with some part of the Marvel Universe.
Yep.
And in this one, it teams her up, Laura or X-23, up with Janet Van Dyne, the Wasp.
Yep.
And
there's a new Wasp coming, but it...
Yeah, but not yet.
But not yet.
Still Janet.
Yeah, and sort of trying to save one of her clones.
They do Fantastic Voyage.
Oh,
that's
or,
cool.
Or Inner Space.
These are both good movies.
Yes, but Inner Space was for Forbidden Voyage.
Yeah. You know. But anyways, they go inside, they shrink down, they go inside trying to stave off what's killing the clone. More things are occurring, but I just think it's those unique ideas that sort of set it apart from, what's come before, and I think Tom Taylor's doing an amazing job with this character.
For a guy who kind of made his name on a video game comic, he surprisingly thinks outside the box.
This book is really good, and I wish more people were reading it.
Yeah, I think people just see it and they're just like, oh god, that's just a cash grab, I'll write it off.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't think they think it's so much a cash grab as they think it's like almost like a bastardization of Wolverine.
Yeah, they don't want Wolverine to be a girl.
Right.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, the story's good. Pay attention.
It's really good. I really like this book as well.
I do know a fair number of people like X-23.
Yeah.
And I think anybody who even remotely has ever liked X-23 should probably give the book
definitely like this, yeah. Dave, what is your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is a book I've mentioned once or twice before, Constantine the Hellblazer, number 9 in this case.
Yep.
That's the latest rethink of Constantine as clearly within the DC universe, although he does not actually interact with it a whole lot in there, but they use some DC sort of magic side characters. By no means is it the Vertigo comic. I feel like it's got sort of more of a pop sensibility to it that I feel like some longtime Hellblazer people, they are not going to like it.
Okay.
But I think that they should give it a shot and do it. If you do it with sort of the open mind of knowing that it is something of a rethink of Constantine, you know, he's, as I've mentioned before, he's overtly bisexual in this. But also that artist on it, the guy who did, what was the book? We just talked about it earlier.
Raleigh Rossmo. He did Proof.
He did Proof, yeah. His art had a certain pop style to it, and the coloring does, too. And it also feels like this is just a slightly younger John Constantine. He feels more full of piss and vinegar and maybe a little less world-weary. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit more of a sly scoundrel. He does get his friends killed, and, you know, he's definitely looking out for number one. But he's not quite as jaded as I think he's become more traditionally in Hellblazer. The story in this one has him actually literally in hell and being tortured by the demon Nero, not Nero,
Neron.
Neron, who's a weird DC supporting character demon. Was it from Superman?
No, it was the
Underworld Unleashed. Yeah, kind of obscure, but
is that a Mark Waid book? I feel like it might have been.
Maybe. But yeah, he's been adopted into the sort of the pantheon of hell, and so they're using him in this one. He and Papa Midnight are literally in hell being tortured by this demon and he's trying to scam his way out like he does. And how he goes about it is actually pretty cool. You could jump in on this issue and not need to know anything else. I feel like I wish it had just a touch more gravity at times, but it's not without it, and I enjoy watching this Constantine operate. I do feel like it's almost like a flashback to if this was in the old Hellblazer comic, it could be a flashback to the earlier Constantine when he was just more cocky.
Yeah.
But it lends to a somewhat more pop sensibility, and I don't know. I feel like people might give it a try. And speaking of which, the graphic novel for the first, 6 issues or so of this run came out today. It will be hitting this day as well. It's just volume 1. It's called Going Down.
Okay.
Anyway, every time I randomly read an issue of the series, I don't keep up with it completely. I always end up liking it, so I don't know. It tells me something.
All right. I believe that's all our picks. So what else is on my stack? I've got Jughead number 4. Forrest is in a Jughead, and with the art change on Archie, I'm going to say I actually like Jughead better than Archie at this point.
Interesting.
It's funny. Every issue has Jughead having some kind of weird flash to some kind of imaginative. You know, last time it was spies.
Yep.
This time it's pirates.
Yep.
It's always some imaginative thing that he has that ties into the ongoing story of a new principal at the school and the flack that the Jughead is getting from him and what that all means. And I really like this. It's written by Chip Zdarsky, so his sense of humor works for me. It's drawn by Erica Henderson of Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, so I think the art is really good.
She's awesome.
I'm really liking this book. Number 2, also Interceptor came out this week, which is the futuristic vampires have taken over the Earth kind of thing.
It happens.
We talked about that. It's a lot of fun. Number 2 of Gutter Magic, the sort of steampunk urban adventure book that I highlighted a little while back. The 9th issue of Autumnlands, Kurt Busiek's anthropomorphic animal fantasy book that I really like. Then new issues of various Marvel things. All New Hawkeye number 4, which flashes back to Kate's history a little bit. Darth Vader number 16. Red Wolf number 3, which Red Wolf is one of these books that it's just not selling very well, but I'm really liking it.
The Native American hero of Marvel's Old West.
Yes, who has come forward to the future and is having some issues there.
Yep.
The second issue of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I was skeptical of this book because I liked Mark Waid's S.H.I.E.L.D. and I wasn't sure what Guggenheim was going to do, but I'm kind of liking what he's doing with it so far. Silk number 4, which is a ton of fun. And Spider-Man 2099 number 6, which... I don't know quite how to describe what's going on in that. There's Inhuman stuff in it, though. So if you like the Inhumans, they're in there.
They're all over this place.
Nick, what else you got?
6-inch issue of The New Avengers, which sees another story arc come to a conclusion. It was just a 2-issue story, which is kind of cool. The 49th issue of Scott Snyder's Batman. Greg Capullo is not nowhere to be seen on this one. Yannick Paquette steps in to handle artwork.
Oh.
It's beautiful. It's got some Morrisonian flavor to it as well, and also a big turning point for Snyder's Batman run. So if you've felt a little off on the last couple of issues, definitely tune in for this one. You're going to like it.
Things come to a head?
Things come to a head. The third issue of the team-up book you never thought would ever happen, Batman and Ninja Turtles, which was very fun. The seventh issue, the 25th anniversary of Deadpool, which is a giant-size mega edition featuring various different stories hits as
that
well.
That is a little crazy, 25 years.
And then the second issue of Legend of Wonder Woman, which is the sort of all-ages Wonder Woman book about sort of a young Diana on Themyscira.
Is it all-ages?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, okay. It's just sort of action-adventure.
Slightly more teen.
I thought it was more teenish, yeah.
It's not like Supergirl's Adventures in the 8th grade or whatever.
Right.
Well, no, and it's not, like, super dark, though. I mean, there's some villains in there, but I would... It's more all-ages than anything we've gotten in a long time.
That's true.
And then the second issue of Jeff Lemire's Old Man Logan, as Logan goes up against the Totally Awesome Hulk.
All right, so yeah, I knew this. I forgot that was coming up, but a callback to their classic clash. Only now everything's a little bit different.
Everything's a little bit different.
Yeah, Logan's old and Hulk is young.
That's true.
that's a very accurate way to put it.
Dave, what do
you
got?
It's pithy. I've got the. Did we mention Descender yet, Randy? Descender number 10. You know we love this series.
Yeah.
This is kind of a downtime issue, but specifically it's set on this secret world of like robot rebellion, like their hideout.
They also meet cyborgs for the first time.
Yep.
Well, not first time, but a cyborg sort of group, and I like the way they did that.
I also like their notion of this sort of a cached file for destroyed robots, where it's
almost based like robot heaven.
It's like a robot heaven where they can also presumably potentially be resurrected from.
Yeah.
So it's like what do you call it? Reincarnation for robots.
Yeah.
Potentially, they're talking about it. To them, it's almost this legendary thing,
right?
But every issue has lots of neat ideas working in that one.
Yep.
There's some other cool characters introduced. So you know, just pick up the Descender trade if we've ever intrigued you on it. I'm mentioning a few that I don't regularly follow, just of minor note. Suicide Squad, mainly because it has this really cool painted art in this issue. I don't know if it's regular or not, but it reminded me of Dustin Nguyen a little bit.
Okay.
Also, you should tell who's writing that one, too.
Who is writing it? Oh, it's Tim Seeley. And we did mention that last time, so I guess it's not just a one-off thing.
Oh, okay.
So Tim Seeley, who we like a lot. I also want to mention Flash 48 randomly, just because it's... Who's the artist who was doing it before? We did not...
Brett Booth.
Brett Booth. Not one of my favorite art. It's very kind of 90s-ish style. The new artist is not, like, amazing, but he's a good, solid...
Is it not Jesus Moreno?
It is. It's Jesus Moreno.
Is it Jesus Moreno?
He was a long-time inker of Carlos Pacheco, actually.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
And he's got a bit of that Pacheco style to him.
And also on the DC front, there's the second issue of Harley's Little Black Book. If you want to see Harley try and get under the skin of Hal Jordan, it is the Harley Green Lantern team.
Who's the artist on that one?
This one is John Timms. I really like the art on this.
Yeah, I remember
like,
saying the art was really nice.
As you know, not a big Deadpool fan, and therefore because Harley is kind of DC's Deadpool these days,
yeah.
Not a huge Harley Quinn fan, at least in this solo book. But it is fun, and I love the art on it. And you know what? The stuff I was flipping through of her meeting up with Hal was actually pretty inspired. So
cool.
Then there's James Bond Varger.
Varger.
The subtitle of this series, issue number 4. And a new new book from Vertigo called Dark and Bloody, which is kind of a, I believe will ultimately have some supernatural elements, but and this one is about kind of a Kentucky kind of rednecky guy who comes back from war and is having trouble sort of readjusting, I like the first issue. Is his life takes some dark twists and turns. And it ends with this crazy, like, sort of southern bayou kind of black magic dude with a possum on his shoulder.
Sure.
As you do. Anyway, if you like horror or a little bit, it's kind of also just a bit of dark realism, I would check out Dark and Blood. It was a solid little first issue.
All right. That about wraps up our comics talk for the week. We will be back in just a second to talk about some TV and video games and podcasts. So we are talking about some TV and other stuff that we've been watching. And I want to start off with a public service announcement that Young Justice seasons 1 and 2 are now on Netflix.
Yes.
I have never seen Young Justice, so I should take advantage of this.
Yes, you should. Young Justice is of the same caliber as Justice League Unlimited, I would say.
Oh, very much so.
It's Greg Weisman again.
It's Greg Weisman, yep.
The always awesome Greg Weisman.
Tons of DC characters. Blue Beetle featured pretty heavily in this. But at some point, he brought in Impulse and...
No, I mean, I think it starts with the core characters.
Oh, yeah.
They introduced the new Aqualad.
Yep. They're training under the Justice League, right?
Yeah, they're like Batman's secret operatives of younger heroes. Yeah. And... What's kind of cool is that the early stuff is really good, and then the second season is like 5 years later, and it's the story of the Reach, the alien bad guys from Blue Beetle. So
was it only 2 seasons?
It was 2 seasons.
But it was a pretty great second season.
It was a great second season, but they definitely could have gone on. And Greg Weisman just recently tweeted, "Hey, if you wanted us to do a third season, now would be a good time to start watching Young Justice." So maybe Netflix is watching to see if it'd be worth them. This is the kind of thing they would do.
Yeah, you know, in olden times, say 10 years ago, I would have said, "Well, this is just a fool's errand. It's a nice idea, but this just stuff never happens."
Yep.
Things like this do happen
all the time now. Yeah,
revivals are.
So if you've ever been curious about Young Justice, now's the time to watch it and get Netflix seeing that numbers spike, and get us that third season that I desperately want.
do it.
Yes. Also, speaking of older stuff that's sort of on the radar, Dave and I have been playing Helldivers.
Right. This is it wasn't a budget title, was it? Or what?
No, it's digital only.
Right. But was it like a $20 thing originally?
No, I think it might have been, actually. Yeah.
It's like a sort of a budget downloadable title for PS4 and maybe Xbox.
Possibly Xbox, because you thought you had it.
Yeah, I think I might have, but I didn't play a ton of it originally. Well, let's just say what the game first is. It's sort of a top-down view game, a little bit like Diablo or something like that, but sci-fi, very much Starship Troopers with the serial number filed off.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of a little bit parody. You are the troopers of a place called Super Earth, and you're fighting a three-front war against the evil socialist cyborgs, the peaceful, so they've got to be up to something, Illuminates, and the nasty bugs who, if you kill them, turn into oil.
Right. It just happens that I love the shots. It's like, you know, securing planets for our freedom in the propaganda films. Yeah. And you see the trooper standing there heroically while, like, oil wells pump in the background.
Yes, yeah.
So it is – I mean, that's what Starship Troopers did. Yeah. Paul Verhoeven's movie from the, late 90s, whatever it was. Yeah.
Biting satire.
Biting satire. Sometimes not realized it's satire by people.
Yes.
So you go down in the core of the game is going down in these mission teams of like up to four people.
Yep.
You can play it solo, but what I learned was that it's actually pretty frustrating to play solo.
Yes.
They want you to play it in teams, and it is so much more fun in teams.
Yes.
Because basically you choose a cool loadout of gear. Yep. And I thought it was interesting when we were playing the other night. All of us had different gear, kind of different play styles. Casey, who we were playing with, was using basically this high-tech shotgun, which was awesome.
Yep.
I was going with a smaller, sort of futuristic MP5, but they could be fired one-handed. So on missions where you have to carry lug around loads, I can still be firing at it instead of just using my pistol.
Right.
And what was your weapon?
I was using the automatic blaster, so it had like the little plasma blasts.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's like you get side weapons, grenades, and like the coolest gear.
And tons. And the cool thing is they really make use of every bit of the controller. Like it's a two stick. You move with one stick, aim with the other.
Yep.
You can fire, throw grenades. And then you can call down what they call stratagems.
Yep.
So you have ships in orbit where you call down stuff. It's anything from a vehicle I had. There's like a four-person vehicle, so some person drives.
This is the big cool stuff.
And then this stuff I've been playing for a while. I'm leveled up.
Basics, you can just get resupplies of ammo.
You can get a heavy machine gun. Early on, you get resupplies of ammo, heavy machine gun, and of course the automatic chain gun turret.
Yeah,
which will not distinguish between friend or foe.
Oh, right. So we noticed that, like, if you've seen Starship Troopers, you may require the call of medic.
Yeah.
Because characters were constantly kind of friendly fire, killed characters. Death was always, it was constant, and it's almost became blackly humorous.
Yep.
It is in this game, too.
Yep. Because you will get shot a lot.
That friendly fire is absolutely there, and you can get, even when you call down stuff, if you are under the target zone and you don't get out of the way,
it will squash you like a bug.
A crate will squash you.
Yep.
It's kind of hysterical, but you do get to come back a few times.
Yes, well, people can always, that's one of the other strategies, you can call your other teammates back in.
Yep.
As long as one guy's still alive, the mission continues.
Yep.
So,
and we had some good Harry type missions. And you're doing fun stuff like you got to get missile launch sites back up and running, or you have to just defend an area.
There are escort missions.
There's escort missions, which when you earn your
you get your first one down. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But I was trying to think when you earn your
achievement.
Your achievement. It's like the achievement is called Don't You Hate Escort Missions. They're very well. It's this very self-aware game.
Yeah, yeah.
But at its heart, it's a fun running around, blowing up stuff, shooting lots of bugs, just like in Starship Troopers or other stuff. Essentially, you're a gleeful fascist in it.
Yep, yep.
And you get to enjoy being it.
Yep. And this is a fun game to play out multiplayer. If you want to play with me and Dave, my tag is Lunchlander.
What am I, Doc Hodag?
I think you're Doc Hodag.
Yep. By the way, my favorite of the things has to be when you call down, this is something I have not achieved yet, that APC.
Oh, yeah.
Because all four members can get in it. Basically, one dude drives. Two guys are door gunners on either side who can pivot around like a gun on their side.
Yep.
And these are pretty powerful guns.
Yeah, they're machine gun, heavy
and
machine
whoever
guns.
Gets in the back gets to control a giant-ass full 360 motion gun on top of it, which will just like blaze through a lot of stuff.
There's a laser sight and a heavy tank, anti-tank weapon.
Fun.
Yeah, if you have the wrong driver, you can accidentally plunge into the lava, killing the entire team.
You know, you did not do that.
No, I just almost did it.
But it was hilarious because if you had driven off the side, we would have all died.
You would have all died.
And it had very nearly happened about three times.
Yep, yep.
You know what? Also, the other cool thing you can call in is power armor.
Yeah.
So if you're one of these guys who, one of the things that bugged you about the Starship Troopers movie, aside from like its sheer goofiness, was that they didn't do the book's power armor. You can call in power
armor. You can call down mechs that have a chain gun in one arm and a missile launcher in the other.
Oh, yeah.
There's also one that's like a dual shotgun. See, as you move up, you get more stuff.
Yeah.
And I've been playing for a while. So what would happen is that I was playing with the guys who were somewhat new, and I was when you rank up, you get ranks. And my guy's a brigadier general. So I figured my guy was the brigadier general in the field, like just bringing down stuff for his troops.
Yeah, and so this was cool because, like, I don't have all of those things, but you get to take a bunch of potential things to call down.
You get four loadouts, and so I brought extra mechs.
Yeah, so I was able to get in a mech even though I was many levels away from earning one myself.
Yeah, this is the free game on PlayStation Plus this month, so if you have PlayStation Plus before February's out, you can go download Helldivers. It's a free game, and
I believe we would say it would also be worth it to pay for.
Yes, it's a great game. I bought it long ago.
Super fun. Remember, if you play it a little bit, it's a single player. It's a good way to like learn the ropes, but jump into multiplayer as quick as you can because it's a million times more fun.
Yeah, you do want to do the training, and then you want to jump into multiplayer.
Yep.
And by the way, this is one that's fun to play with sort of random people, I think.
Yeah, we're not like particularly in communication with them.
Right, no, I don't usually get on chat with them.
The one thing, there's little emotes you can do which are like, follow me, or wait here, so that you can get some basic stuff across. But there was some guy playing in our group.
Yeah.
And... well, we didn't know who he was, it was alternately, everything worked out pretty well.
He
got the gist of what everybody was doing, even though we were all talking on mics with our friends.
Yeah.
But it was kind of, it had that funny thing because, you know, like, oh, sorry, we dropped a crate on you from orbit.
Yes.
But I'm like, you know, you can get out of the way of the crate. Or like, you know, sometimes we would shoot him.
Yes.
You know? It happened. We were shooting each other. It just happened. But anyway, we need you out there on the front line. The bugs are taking over.
That's
we
right.
need to stop them and turn them into oil.
That's
Please
right.
help us. Please help us build the wall.
Nick, I understand you've been listening to another new podcast.
Yeah, this is... I've been sort of craving podcasts right now just because I've gotten into the habit of listening in the car. And this one is a show called Lore.
Like Data's evil brother?
Yes, exactly like that. In fact, he's the person podcasting. No, in fact, is a horror novelist. His name is Aaron Mankey. What he does is sort of take an idea, something that is the basis for horror movies or horror books.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first episode is all about vampires and sort of goes through the mythology of what actually... You know, it was based
on... What inspired him.
Yeah, what inspired sort of the notion of vampires. And
tell me about the one you were telling me about. So Bram Stoker is like wrote the most famous vampire story that really got the ball rolling. But, of course, there were myths and legends before that.
But there
and
was
one in particular.
Yeah, one in particular was like a family in like the mid-1800s. Like, the mother died of consumption.
Okay.
And the consumption was thought of that something was consuming her body. And that was what they thought. Like, 5 years later, the daughter died of consumption as well. Then the sort of brother started dying of consumption, and he moved away but came back, and it was sort of, and then he died. So it was sort of thought that something, one of the past family members was coming back and basically draining their bloods. This was actually a fact. And they unearthed their body.
Local folklore and all
that. It was in Massachusetts, of all places.
Okay.
And
nothing bad ever happens in Massachusetts.
Well, it was somewhere on the East Coast, maybe not Massachusetts, but very much that East Coast thing.
This part's interesting.
And they basically unearthed the bodies, and the first two, normal decomposition, what you would expect to find. The third one was buried like in the winter in a crypt, so it was kept sort of hermetically sealed. And it didn't have much decomposition even after years.
You've clearly got your blood
and,
sucker.
Yeah, and it was they basically took out
your
the heart,
vampire.
The liver, found that there was blood in on the sort of body parts. They burned it, they drove a stake through it, and this actually reached into like papers around, and it, when somebody was going through Bram Stoker's stuff, they found this clipping of it, and it was kind of interesting things like that.
So the show's going to be reaching back and finding these interesting, like, weird side stories that you may not know about, that but probably fed into the lore that's become, you know,
the
part
second
of our pop
one
culture.
Was about, it was called The Bloody Pit, which I had never, I did not know what this is in regards to.
The Bloody Pit.
But it is actually, like, a train tunnel, the Hoosac Tunnel.
Okay.
This one actually is in western Massachusetts, but, like, 200 people have died there. Like, ghost hunters constantly go there. There's weirdness all around it. Few people have actually walked the entire through it, and it's like it's not like hugely long. It's like 25,081 feet, so not.
But you're going through a tunnel.
Yeah,
so.
It's a tunnel, but it's insane. And just he goes into in-depth sort of detail about like all of these things, but they're very brief.
Well, both those stories you meant like 20-30 minute podcast,
Between 15 and 20 minutes.
Okay. Both the stories you mentioned are pretty like I didn't know either of those.
No, I didn't either.
And so it sounds like if you are a fan of the horror or macabre, you're going to probably get some stuff you don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that he kind of glosses over a few things here and there, but it makes for interesting, I want to know more about that. So you can sort of go off on the beaten path and sort of do some investigation.
Nice. Interesting. Finally, Nick, you and I both watched The People vs. O.J. Simpson.
Yes, the first episode.
Which I was not expecting to like. I honestly, Ryan Murphy, even though I liked Scream Queens, I haven't finished watching it.
I haven't either.
I am hit and miss with him at the best. And the O.J. Simpson story I remember from when I was watching it live. And
I watched it live. We watched it live in school.
Oh, wow.
While it was happening.
Yeah.
It was very weird.
Interesting.
And so I didn't think I had that much interest in it. But this first episode was great.
Well, I think what attracted me the most to it was the cast.
It's got a fantastic cast.
I mean, Ryan Murphy, I think I'm with you. It's very hit and miss.
Here's what I found out. Ryan Murphy didn't write any of this.
Right.
He came on as like the producer to sort of help shepherd it through FX.
Yeah. Well, his name has a lot of cachet at this point. So
it's not his writing, so it doesn't have quite the extreme that I thought it might like.
Every once in a while something ekes through like, that's kind of weird and kind of darkly humorous.
Right.
That he would...
But the cast is, it's got Cuba Gooding Jr. is playing O.J., John Travolta is playing Robert Shapiro.
Right.
There's Marsha Clark is played by Sarah Paulson.
Sarah Paulson, yes.
And who else? David Schwimmer is playing Kardashian.
Yes.
Ron Kardashian? His name?
I forget.
I think it is Ron Kardashian.
The cast they've put together.
Yeah.
Oh, there's...
And there's I forget who the guy who's playing Kato Kaelin, but he's playing him perfectly. this is the first episode is all about everything leading up to the White Bronco chase. So it's like the police discovery of the body, the discovery of the bloody glove.
Is this a dramatization of it?
It is based on a book, The People vs. O.J. Simpson, that was written.
Okay.
So somebody did a bunch of interviews and then wrote a book about it.
Okay.
And so it is, they show Marsha Clark and sort of, she's going through a divorce and all the pressure's on her. And they show the defense team starting to show up. They show Ron Kardashian being sort of OJ's friend and not disbelieving this could happen. And, of course, there's a lot of nods to Kim and Chloe being his daughters at this time, who are sort of in the midst of all this.
This
was really the birth of sort of TMZ and celebrity culture and a lot of this stuff in the OJ Simpson trial. It was so lurid and so crazy that it.
I would say it's like sort of a modern rebirth because there used to be trashy Hollywood tabloids.
Sure, but this was before all that stuff had sort of resurfaced.
Right,
the way
it was
it
a
has.
New level.
Yeah,
it was a new era, and I think part of it was because it emerged like that. Chase emerged online. Everybody in the world watched.
Yeah.
That. It's like you couldn't have. There wasn't trashy Hollywood stuff going on back in the 40s that everybody was aware of the instant it happened.
Right, right.
It had to come down through rumor and innuendo.
I was trying to think of all the other people that were in it.
Connie Britton is in it.
Connie Britton,
Selma Blair.
Jordana Brewster.
Yeah.
Kenneth Troy, which is one of those character actors who plays Judge Vito.
Yeah.
It's just sort
it's,
of this.
It's an amazing cast.
And I will
what's
say,
what's it running on?
FX.
And one season thing?
Yes. Well, it's going to be, it's actually called American Crime Story.
Right.
But they sort of are focusing on People vs. O.J. Simpson because American Crime is an ABC show that is also an anthology story about crime stories. So season two, did you hear they're going to be doing, I blanked on it. It's another obvious one to do. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. But
I like the concept behind it. Sort
was
of
it
a season
two brothers who killed?
No, it's not the Menendez.
Is it Sue
Smith? No.
Is it?
It's a true crime thing. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah,
but
I like that the notion of that, sort of just running with one story every
season. Here's the thing. Well, first of all, we've seen like in podcast format how well that, say, worked for something like Serial.
Yeah, Serial definitely inspired this.
Yeah. But what I was going to say is I lived through the OJ thing. I was kind of half watching it on that fascinated by the pop culture thing. But certainly not watching it with any sort of discerning eye.
No, me neither.
So I would be fascinated to see something like this that presumably has been lensed through more discerning eyes.
What I think would be interesting, Dave, is you may discover what I discovered, which is I thought I didn't remember much of this, but I remember all the players. I remember the various lawyers.
Everybody you've named, I'm like, oh, Judge Ito,
and Johnny Cochran, of course.
Yep.
And
it was a crazy, flamboyant show.
Oh, and the thing I thought was interesting, they open with the Rodney King verdict and the riots and some footage of that. And it's funny because at the time as a, you know, young, maybe just out of college guy, college white guy, I had not put together how much of the OJ verdict and the OJ trial was tied into the racial tensions of LA that were as high as they had ever been thanks to the Rodney King verdict and the riots and all that stuff. And this was like 2 or 3 years later.
Right, so in the same way, like, we were very aware after, like, Ferguson of all these other sort of tie-in and stuff. But, yeah, like, when I was in right about that age in college, I was half aware of that stuff.
Yeah.
I was not really seeing how they fed into each other.
I was not, as the kids say, woke.
I've also seen a lot of people sort of dissing John Travolta's depiction of Shapiro.
I agree with those disses, yes.
He's
hamming it up. He's fine. He's good. But he's got this... Sometimes actors like to chew on a meaty part, and this guy's Shapiro is a guy who loves being the Hollywood lawyer. He's got this facial tic sort of speech impediment thing, and so he's playing it. He's sort of overplaying that, and then occasionally when he gets to the sort of excited yelling, he becomes Travolta from
Face Off.
Yes, I definitely saw at least one of those moments, and they're like, "Oh, that's just Travolta yelling."
Yeah.
It's very much just like
sometimes
Broken
it's hard
Arrow
for
style.
Somebody playing somebody so well known politicians and things like that to not. I mean, they still are always going to be themselves.
Yeah, sure.
There's just kind of no getting around
them. I mean, I have the same issue with Cuba Gooding Jr. I think he's playing and he's good, but he's doing a lot of yelly acting.
Yeah.
And I know that we're supposed to. That OJ was supposed to be sort of a volatile guy.
Yeah, I think
but,
he was.
But it is a little over the top from time to time.
I still have a hard time separating the Naked Gun OJ from...
Yeah. Well, that's what this was all about.
That was so surreal about it.
Yeah, I love, like, in one of the opening scenes between the two cops that are sort of there to kind of question him.
Yeah.
And like, so who's this guy? And he's like, he's a famous athlete. I didn't watch that. And he's like, the Naked Gun guy.
Yeah.
And it's like... It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But I need to watch this.
Well,
this
the production
really
values are so good. It's shot beautifully.
Yeah.
I think the next episode airs tonight.
Maybe tonight. Yeah, it's really interesting. And
I'm sorry, say the channel again.
It is on FX.
Okay, got it.
And is the People versus O.J. Simpson. All right, that about wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more.
Thanks for being with us for 100 episodes or however many it's been for you.
Yes,
even if it's only one. We're
no,
not judging you.
You know what? It's been one. You don't get your thanks yet.
Yeah, that's
come
right.
back in a few
that's
episodes.
That's right. Fast forward through this thank you.
It's fast forward, yeah.
Right,
don't take somebody else's thank you.
For all the rest of you, thank you very much for being with us. Tell your friends. And until next time.
Yo, Joe! Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends.
Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.